Okay, so do we start or
yes,
ourselves?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So this works fine. We have 6 minutes, 7 minutes?
7 minutes.
Okay. He's Swiss. I mean, Swiss.
Swiss time. German. Swiss time.
Well, I brought my Swiss watch with me.
So let me start by explaining this approach to risk. That's quite different from. I wouldn't say the conventional one, because that used to be the conventional one until we invented something, a field called risk management. This cup is fragile. It is fragile because it doesn't like volatility, and it has very specific attributes, sensitivity to volatility. We're going to start with the first mistake we tend to make in risk management, and in a lot of research we do in probability theory, that what matters for me is my exposure, okay, what happens to me. What people tend to study is a random variable. So there's that conflation between a variable and the exposure to that variable. Very often, the risk or the source of risk is extremely hard to compute, but I can avoid. Instead of wasting my time trying to compute the statistical properties, which I will never get, I can change my exposure. It's called a convex transformation. And in fact, matters a lot more. And I remember a fellow who one day told me, people overpay for quants. We need lawyers more than quants. In other words, your contract you need to have, all right, is vastly more important to the exposure than the variable itself. So that's the first error. Second error here, which will allow me to voice my displeasure with that term called resilience, which is absolutely meaningless scientifically and overabused. So it is as follows. This is a high water mark. We have the tendency to believe, to take the high water mark, how high did the Nile rise, as the scribes in ancient Egypt did, measure and think that, hey, it's not going to be worse. So try to hedge to that. That's called, you know, hedging to the past worse. And that's an error. I call it the Lucretius problem, because he said that the fool thinks that the tallest possible mountain equals the tallest mountain he has seen. Now, this is important for two things, because when you look at natural things, even your human body, it doesn't adjust to the worst past. It adjusts to something higher. It takes the exposure from the past and prepares for higher, or it's a mechanism called overcompensation. In medicine, hormesis. This is very important because your brain doesn't. So when you study risk, you're not as good as when you act based on your perception of risk. This is very important. It defines antifragility, the difference between fragility, antifragility, and robustness. We don't have a lot of time, but the way view things is in terms of do you have a concave exposure to the source of risk? Because again, I'm talking about exposure. I couldn't care less about risk. I care how it affects me. Is it concave or is it convex? Concave means accelerated harm. Is it convex? Now, it's very interesting that by theorem, we figure out there's a link between what is concave and what is fragile. If you're fragile, then you're necessarily concave to a source of risk. If you take that coffee cup, it is fragile. It means it has more downside than upside from earthquakes. The exposure is asymmetric. So that asymmetry, okay, you can divide it and you can use it for a lot of things, namely to figure out the following, that what is fragile has to have an accelerated negative response to a random variable. It's necessary, and we'll argue about it perhaps later. It's vastly more interesting than disagreement about swans and animals and dragons and stuff, figuring out. Why is it so? Because everything that survived that is linear has gone bust. This is, for example, you see the graph here. This is a coffee cup, source of stress on the horizontal. I had to use graphs. It's easier for me to communicate. If you see the one that is more linear is more exposed because the harm, I don't know if I have a pointer here, the harm is on the left side of the graph. So whatever is exposed to harm in a linear way is linear to harm is gone. What is left is what only blows up if there's a large deviation. And that has to have these attributes. It's a little technical, but in 7 minutes, I can't do a lot better than that. Am I done, or can I have how many more minutes?
No.
Okay, sorry. Should I go further? Okay, so I pretty much, I pretty much have explained my point that everything in nature likes these things or doesn't like these things up to some degree. This is how things are in nature. Typically, you have an S-curve response. That S-curve can take a lot of shapes. The part that is convex of the S-curve loves randomness, variability, time. The part that is concave doesn't like variability, doesn't like time. And some things are like variability up to a point, don't like it beyond that. And risk is linked to that concept. We'll elucidate later. I wanted to use graphs because it's hard to explain in words what a graph can do. And hopefully, we'll start the conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
And in it, I talk about this building, right? The third page of the prologue. I talk about this building. I was so irritated at people who tell me, is it a black swan, not a black swan, by explaining to them that there's no such thing as objective black swan, no more than there's such thing as non-epistemic randomness. And the whole point is as follows. This building, all right? Do you think September 11 was a black swan event?
No.
It was not a black swan event. September 11th.
No.
Okay, no, that's different. Okay, my point is, for someone in a building, was it a black swan event?
Yes.
Or otherwise, yes. You won't be in a building, all right? For the pilot of the plane, was it a black swan event? No, visibly. All right, so this is my whole thing, that a black swan for the turkey is not a black swan for the butcher, right?
Yes.
And that was the definition of the whole thing. No. I mean, I'm not saying a turkey, but the definition of black swan is epistemic, largely epistemic, okay? There are very few physical phenomena in nature that are purely random. Largely, it's because so that's the point. So what I call black swan.
So you agree with me?
What I call black swan, what you call dragon king, are predictable large deviations, sort of predictable, that I call great swan. Mm-hmm. But this is not good news, actually. All right, we're going to see why it's not good news, because I agree, but we can start disagreeing on something. All right, okay. I agree with your representation. I think it is rigorous and mathematically rigorous, but it has severe problems in its application, which is as follows. That I learned from. Anyone learn from calibrating distribution, is that small little changes in your model change the output dramatically. And let me give you a very simple example. When I calibrate the power law, okay, I have the alpha of the power law. Well, take the alpha of the power law, and I actually used your book with my students as a way to learn about power laws. But there's one thing you notice, is that small probabilities are very sensitive to small changes in the alpha. So if you change the alpha between 2 and 3, for example, an event that happens every 5 million years happens now every 600 days. Okay? And that was my point. So I agree with your representation so long as you don't bring it down to very precise prediction. But let me give you good news. Let me give you good news now. You have so much time up there, you know.
Yeah.
I have to.
We need equity. I'm telling you what I agree with you. You remember I put these slides. They were incomprehensible early on. They'll be more comprehensible as we go. Well, the following statement. I was a trader for 21 years. I had hair when I started. All right. So, and one thing you learn as a trader. Is that it's not your opinion that will ever make you money or make you bankrupt. You know what will really make it or break it for you? Is how you express your opinion. The financial instrument or the strategy is vastly more important than whether you guess right, you see? For example, if you use options and they're convex, you could be wrong 99% of the time, you'll still be okay, you see? So your strategy, all right, okay, is not, I don't believe, can lend itself to regular prediction. On the other hand, as a conceptual framework, expressed with the right financial instrument, See, you can do okay. And let me give you an example. You've seen gold collapsing. I know a lot of people who make a fortune during the collapse of gold, long gold. Why? Because the strategy, the minute you have a convex or concave strategy, and this is the third slide, see, progressively I'm explaining my slides, you divorce yourself from the statistical property of the underlying by having smaller losses when you're wrong and much bigger profits when you're right. And this is what matters a lot more. And this is what's not understood by people who casually look at statistical data, all right, and think it maps directly into performance.
Okay. Didier, and then I would like to ask you about your reaction. We have learned it is a gray swan.
Sorry?
There's also, we have a black swan. Now.
Yeah, I call these Mandelbrot, who called them, I was arguing with him, right? Yeah. These are, then we called them gray swan, and okay. We gave him, and he put the stamp. But I'm glad now you have the book. You can keep calling them Dragon King and so on, but they're not too different from gray swan.
Okay, I mean, so maybe you can comment.
But this is not the important part. The important part is not the fact that they're gray is not important for, you know, as animals competing, you know, subtitles, but it's important because the fact that they're gray makes them weakly predictable, right? Not strongly predictable.
Okay. We get some information showing us that the system will change its behavior, and we have a chance to do something. What do you say to that?
Okay. The first thing I want to show, there's a lot of things the French call dialogue de sourds, where people are talking past each other, because you talk two different things that are not overlapping. They try to make them overlapping, and this is. So let me go back, reframe it. I work in engineering, okay? An engineer's job is not to dream of the structure of the world, but to make sure the bridge doesn't collapse tomorrow, okay? So then you have to have tools that are not too complicated, that heuristics, someone mentioned heuristics earlier, and that's precisely what we get out of the exercise, heuristics, to figure out if this bridge is going to withstand some kind of shocks and stuff like that. And what bridge is more fragile than the other? You can measure fragility, okay? You can measure fragility. He's a physicist. Well, the physicist has a theoretical representation of the world, and necessarily you have to specify dynamics. That's your job, okay?
I'm not a physicist.
No, okay, so what are you now?
A polyglot of science.
Oh, whatever. Okay, so you are, let's put it this way. You are a polyglot of science, but...
Of science.
Science.
Science polyglot.
Yeah, science polyglot. No, but let's call it a theoretician, right? Yeah.
Physicist, economist,
you have to get the dynamics or econophysics and stuff like that, part of it, the dynamics of the process. Now, what I suggest is very simple tricks to figure out if the thing's going to fall apart. But it's very nice to have the dynamics of the process. And I truly believe, as you say, that there are basins, okay, that there are things you can do. But so far, and I told you, I started trading when I had a lot of hair, all right? And progressively, I lost my hair. And during this period, I've seen a lot of people trying to fit dynamics.
You see, I'm still keeping my air,
okay, yes.
And we're trading without system.
So
must be a tell sign.
Maybe. But I'm saying that you have the figuring out dynamics is a very good story, and it's definitely, and I believe in it. Okay. However, you don't want your brain surgeon to do dynamics tomorrow when he performs brain surgery. You want him to be a much better micro risk manager. And leave it to the evening when you have a drink with friends, then you can think of the world. But trying to run the world and manage the world using, you know, sort of what I call overly predictive framework is not good. But how, on the other hand, I would definitely, if you gave me a call and said there's something like that, I may buy some options. You see the idea? I am not discounting that you probably, this, what you're doing, is a very good way to view the world. It has some mathematical rigor. It is in compliance, with, as you said, with unpredictability in this class of systems. However, you cannot use it neither to manage risk, nor, I think, to make a living with this. You have to have the price of financial instruments built in. You have to have too much more information. This is why I've never seen it.
I would just say it's not because you have not seen it that something is impossible. Something that's not yet been done that it cannot be done.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I am not saying it's impossible. I'm saying it's not as robust as trying to be a good engineer to make sure that the truck doesn't fall in the Hudson.
But on the, as an engineer, just briefly, 30 seconds, you would like actually to monitor in time, in the time dynamics, recording the acoustic emission, the non-destructive technique methods, in order to see in the time domain that the bridge is not just for tomorrow, but whether it is going to collapse, and indeed you need the time dimension.
Typically, all I can say is that when states intervene to try to make things better, about half the time they make things better, the other half they make things a lot worse. As I heard when I walked in about the biofuels, right? You solve the problem by creating immediately another problem which will require other high-paid civil servants to solve that problem and so on. So there are a lot of things. So I think we should go by heuristics rather than go by large-scale state-sponsored techniques. You find the minimum here because things that don't have a lot of side effects. And there is a very, very easy way to identify those. The economists, they're not the brightest. They're not as sophisticated as you mathematically and don't have as clean a view as one by econophysicists and stuff like that. But they figured out something a long time ago. Milton Friedman and then Lucas with the Lucas critique. You know the Lucas critique. It tells you the following. That once the statistical properties become detectable by intelligent people who read your papers and own computers, a lot of people own computers these days, and have friends who own computers and stuff and work in basements, and then you have a lot of people because we all have access to screens. Once the statistical properties become detectable, then become self-canceling. All right, it would be, and that's pretty much the Lucas critique, and later on there's another English guy with this. So that is the big problem you have with trying to work with dynamics, is that unfortunately we are not a particle in water, we are humans who understand, and we're part of the system. Okay, the economists, they're not the brightest, they're not as sophisticated as you mathematically, and don't have as clean a view as one by econophysicists and stuff like that. But they figured out something a long time ago. Milton Friedman and then Lucas with the Lucas critique. You know the Lucas critique. It tells you the following. That once the statistical properties become detectable by intelligent people who read your papers and own computers, a lot of people own computers these days, and have friends who own computers and stuff and work in basements, and then you have a lot of people because we all have access to screens. Once the statistical properties become detectable, then become self-canceling. All right, it would be, and that's pretty much the Lucas critique, and later on there's another English guy with this. So that is the big problem you have with trying to work with dynamics, is that unfortunately we are not a particle in water, we are humans who understand, and we're part of the system. Okay.
So how would you respond to those, again, to some of the critiques of, again, this buying options, never selling?
Yeah, it's nice to be filmed for this answer. Most people who say that owning option is not profitable tend to work for a living, right? That's kind of a problem. If you look at the studies done on tail options, you will notice one thing that's quite shocking, is that the rigor in them is zero, okay? Use for proxy different domains, and they don't take into account his possibility of having his king, what we call dragon king. Mm-hmm. All right, his dragon king. You see, I'm using your terms. His dragon king, the small probability of a dragon king would change the pricing of the option. And for example, you know that selling options, selling optionality, all right, has never made any money in history. And to prove the banks, for example, they keep saying it's profitable, profitable. They lost in 2007, 2008. 4.7 trillion, you know, before we bail them out. And they keep selling tail options. So selling tails has not been profitable historically. Owning tails has been profitable historically. Yet academics are convinced that selling tails is not good and owning tails, that's why they're academics. Right. Okay, the idea of detecting fragility is not predictive at all. It tells you very simply that if this coffee cup, you're not working on earthquake. You say if there's an earthquake, magnitude 2.0, this coffee cup will break. So if you look at the financial system, you can assess it at any point in time, which I did in actually the Black Swan, 2007. That was, I prefer to talk about crises before they happen rather than after. All right, that's the preference. I was discussing Syria or Fannie Mae, for example, or the financial system. The thing is, it is designed in a way, it gets in a situation where it cannot take a random event without falling apart. Okay, so you say, okay, this bridge is fragile. I'm not going to be able to predict which truck is going to break the bridge, but I can say it's fragile. And it's a good bet, for example, to try to be positioned to benefit from the collapse of the bridge if the engineers don't want to listen to me. Okay, but I'm not predicting, per se. It's not a prediction. Prediction is a misnomer.